Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like filling out basketball brackets. Too many choices, too much noise, and no one wants a busted budget. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break down real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Make smarter financial plays today. No luck required. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Friday afternoon, March 28th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us. I'm Rob Hart. Thanks, Nancy. We'll check in with you at 12:23. This year's Bar and Restaurant Expo in Las Vegas featured an emphasis on safety and wellness. We'll cover that in our next segment, but right now, a key gauge of inflation widely used by the Fed rose more than expected last month. We welcome in Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And what are some of the highlights and lowlights in the latest read on inflation, the PCE report?
Oh, hi, Rob. Yeah, the PCE report came in just a little bit stronger than expected and a little bit above the Fed's target, but not really anything terribly to worry about. We are seeing some firms start to increase prices to anticipate tariffs, but most others are still in a wait-and-see mode. And I think what we need to keep in mind here is that the economy is still pretty solid going forward, and we're watching the labor market more than we're watching numbers like this core PCE, personal consumption expenditures deflator. As long as that labor market stays solid, and there's another report a week from now, we think the economy can avoid a recession.
Now, it seems to the PCE figure for the month of February, the Personal Consumption Expenditure Index, and also the report on consumer spending, which came in below analysts' expectations, just a tick, seems to line up with all of the other data and anecdata we are hearing about the economy.
Yeah, there's a slowdown going on, but I would call it more of a downshift. You know, when you downshift, you're slowing down but under control. If we thought this was going to be a recession, what we would expect to see would be a cascade of contraction, a cascade of pulling back. We wouldn't see the housing strength that we're seeing. We wouldn't see manufacturing doing okay. We wouldn't see consumers putting aside 0.9% personal income last month and then 0.8% this month. That tells me, hey, households have cash in the drawer. They're going to spend that. We're not seeing that sort of cascade of weakness.
So what is really what's in the air? Is this just simply a case of an economy that's been running especially hot for 4 years now, slowing down to catch its breath? Or is this a case of consumers, just like everybody else, trying to make hide nor hair out of tariff policies and some other things we've been hearing from the White House?
Like an economist, I'm going to say yes, both. but one of those is more important than the other, we think. You've had really strong growth in 23 and 24. Remember, back in 22 and 23, there were two jobs open for every person looking for a job for most of those 2 years. And now we're back down to a more typical half a job per person, or if you prefer, easier math, one job for every two people looking for work. And wages continue to go up, and it's not driving inflation higher. It's because productivity has improved at the same time. So yes, take catching their breath. By the way, not unusual for consumers to want to catch their breath after a really strong spending spree in the fourth quarter, holiday driven probably. So that's not unusual, and it's not unusual for the economy to slow down from a really fast pace to one that's historically more average. We think that's going to be the case by the time we get to the end of this year, but we'll have to get through some of these headwinds in the first quarter first. And so, yes, the tariffs are part of those headwinds.
Paul Christopher, Head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, the rise of non-alcoholic beverages and customer safety at restaurants and bars.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Our guest in this segment just returned from the Bar and Restaurant Expo held this week in Las Vegas. Joining us to discuss the two big trends emerging from the show is Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the restaurant coach in Chicago. Izzy, we should like deputize you as our official Las Vegas correspondent because we had your dispatch from the pizza convention earlier this week, and then you went to the Bar and Restaurant Expo in Las Vegas. And what are some of the standout trends in the bar and restaurant space into going into 25?
Well, a couple of very interesting things, Rob. And the first one that stands out is consumer safety, but it's a unique perspective. So there are manufacturers who have come out with independent, tests for drinking. So if you think you might have had too much to drink, you're at a bar that a lot of bars will now be able to supply you for free or for a dollar. Here's a test. Do your own breathalyzer test, and you could see where you are and whether you should drive or not. The other part of that is there's one that some bars are putting at their door. So if somebody wants to do their own breathalyzer test on a bigger screen and see something, again, they blow into it. And it doesn't give them their point score, but it tells them if they're in, kind of a danger area. And what's interesting with this company is they say that 80% of the time when a consumer sees where they are in their alcoholic consumption, they make the decision not to drive. So that's very powerful. And then the one that I thought was the most interesting is a simple strip test that, you can go into a bar, a young woman, and if you feel that somebody might have put something into your drink, you can put a test strip into it very quickly, and it gives you an instant reading to tell you if any kind of drug has been put into your beverage.
And with the breathalyzer at the bar, allowing people to see if they are under the legal limit or not, or good enough to drive or not, is this just simply a case of bars trying to provide a public service and be good citizens, or are there potential legal liability issues that would encourage them to purchase these machines?
Well, it's a little bit of both right now. I'd say it's something that bars provide for the safety of their guests. But California, of course, is setting the trend. It's a state law now that every bar must have these tests available for their guests. So, in the next 5 or so years, we'll probably see this sweep across the country as a law in just about every state.
And then the other trend that was making itself apparent, and this has been around for a couple of years now, and it's really starting to assert itself, is the rise in non-alcoholic beverages. And of course, there are a lot of reasons underpinning that. You had a lot of people who may have overdone it on drinking during the COVID shutdowns and decided they needed to make a change, and this is turning into a lucrative marketplace.
Right. A couple of years ago, it was just something that some bars would offer, mostly non-alcoholic beer. And as the trend grew, then, restaurants were offering all sorts of non-alcoholic cocktails. Well, of course, the market caught up with that. And now a large amount of these, manufacturers are making all sorts of, the full array of every alcoholic type beverage you can think of. Without alcohol. And I was, in my week in Vegas, every bar that I went to and cocktail list that I saw maybe 4 years ago might have had one non-alcoholic cocktail. Now the non-alcoholic cocktails are as wide on that menu as their cocktail list. So lots of options, but it is a growing market. People are going for the pure alcohol. And what's interesting is that the, target audience isn't, people over 40. Target audience is, 25 to 30.
Izzy Karish, president of Hospitality Works, a.k.a. the Restaurant Coach in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, the impact of over-tourism on popular destinations in Europe.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
As many people start planning summer vacations, especially to Europe, several popular destinations are likely to be overwhelmed by tourists. Joining us to discuss spots to consider skipping is Mark Wolters, Wolters World Travel and Culture. Find him on YouTube. He's also an associate professor of business administration at the University of Illinois Geese College of Business in Urbana-Champaign. Mark, thank you for joining us today. And have there been other points in our history where Americans have been beating a path to Europe in as many numbers as they are now?
Well, I think, Rob, like we've been going for a long time. I think the repercussions from after the pandemic with the hotels that closed down in Europe and the restaurants that closed down, that they just can't take the capacity like they used to, because the numbers aren't that much higher than they were in 2019. But it's just that they're having a tough time, you know, getting everybody in. So everything feels a lot more smushed together when you have fewer restaurants, fewer hotels. So part of it's that. But yeah, in general, overall, just numbers wise, yeah, we are beating the trail to Europe every summer now.
Well, as I said in a segment a couple of weeks ago, if you look at those like flight tracking apps, the North Atlantic overnight might as well be the Dan Ryan Expressway, just for the amount of aircraft that are flying from North America, taking tourists to Europe to see the sights. But it turns out those sights are getting pretty crowded. So if you're thinking about going to Europe as part of a summer vacation, there are probably some places that you should avoid.
Well, yeah, and I think there's actually three places in Greece that people really have flocked to: Athens, Mykonos, and Santorini. And so those are very much getting overwhelmed. But the thing is, if you pick some would say the hidden gems, but even just some of the secondary cities or the secondary islands, going to Crete, you know, instead of Santorini, can really save yourself a lot of headache and a lot of money and a lot less crowd. So there are opportunities not to get overrun with tourists, but some of those big destinations, you know, Dublin, Athens, Barcelona, Amsterdam, those places, expect to be elbow to elbow with other tourists this summer.
Now, when it comes to some of those locations in Greece that you were talking about, for sure, that is the Instagram effect. People want to go to these destinations and then post that amazing picture on social media. And are you seeing that as well? Is that what's driving some of this this tourism demand?
Oh, yeah, especially for specific destinations. The Instagram inspiration, the TikTok inspiration for that shot is real. And they're beautiful shots. But my thing, what I tell a lot of tourists is, like, it's a shot. Don't let that dictate your vacation, because a lot of people will go, I just want to get that picture. And therefore, they miss out on the culture, or they don't realize that, wait, that literally is just that one shot. There's not much else there. And you kind of miss out on other things you could do on vacation. So, I mean, get the shot because you want to get it, but realize that shouldn't be the determining factor in your destination and where you want to go.
Now, very quickly, Mark, if you have spent your entire life dreaming of going to Paris, should you probably give in to that romantic notion. You shouldn't just say, you know what, I've always wanted to go to Paris, but we're going to Brussels because it's more practical. So if you want to go to a particular destination, what do you need to know?
I would say definitely go. It is your dream. It is your vacation. But plan other things to do, or plan, you know, well plan ahead. If you want to get that picture, go early in the morning or go late in the evening so the tour buses haven't got there, the tour groups haven't got there yet, because that's going to be much more of a chance. That's why some people that get those shots like of the Great Wall of China, like, how do you have nobody there? Well, they're there right when the door is open, so they could hurry and rush to get it. And it sounds silly, but that can help you get that shot, and then you can go enjoy the rest of your time in Paris, to even though there's going to be a lot of tourists. And Paris is a great city to go, even if it is busy, because they can handle the tourism. It's other cities that can't, like Hallstatt in Austria. They just can't handle the number of people that come through. So that's another thing to kind of think about.
Mark Wolters, Wolters World Travel and Culture. Find him on YouTube. Thank you for joining us today.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM.
This is Rachel Pearson. Chicago nonprofit wins a temporary block of President Trump's anti-DEI orders.
At least 150 people are dead after a major earthquake in Asia. It's Entrepreneur Friday. We'll check in with the owner of a local food truck and catering business who was once the leader of a street gang. Gas prices are accelerating as we roll into spring. WBBM Business, the markets are low. The Dow is down nearly 2% now, 761 points. The NASDAQ closing in on a 3% contraction, or 492 points. And the S&P 500 down 2%, or 118 points. We have 68 degrees right now under partly sunny skies. It's 1231. Topping our news at the half hour, there's some good news for a Chicago nonprofit that's challenging President Trump's orders targeting DEI.
A federal judge in Northern Illinois temporarily blocked the Labor Department from enforcing parts of President Trump's executive orders that target diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. The ruling comes after Chicago Women in Trades, which trains women for construction careers, sued, saying the orders threaten their mission and violate free speech. The Trump administration argues the rules only target illegal DEI programs, but Judge Matthew Kennelly sided with the nonprofit, saying the vagueness of Trump's demands on top of financial penalties would likely pressure organizations to scale back DEI efforts. A full hearing is set for April 10th. Rachel Pearson, News Radio, 105.9 WBBM.
A powerful earthquake has rocked Myanmar and neighboring Thailand, killing at least 150 people. Most of those deaths occurred in Myanmar. Seven people in the city of Bangkok were killed, dozens of others buried when a high-rise building that was under construction collapsed. The quake struck at midday local time and was followed by a strong aftershock. It's 12:32. As the noon business hour continues, stocks are trading sharply lower. We welcome in J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America and president of Tasty Trade in Chicago. J.J., thank you for joining us today. Now, it's conventional wisdom today that the markets are selling off in reaction to this PCE inflation report that came in above expectations. But can you explain to us, you know, technically how that works and why traders and investors behave in the way that they do?
Well, I think there's a few things that go into this. You know, you're coming off such a time, we're not coming off, we're still in a time of such uncertainty that at the moment there's a negative connotation to everything in the market. You know, we're having the worst month we've had since September of 2023. So anything that does not come in outstanding starts to be viewed pretty negatively, as we're seeing today, right? And so with that, we start to see selling pressure on the news. You know, sometimes it's, hey, look for reasons to buy. This is one of those, look for reasons to sell. And so, you know, you have the consumer sentiment to the lowest level in 2 years. You have the PCE number not coming in. So people are just looking for reasons to sell things off right now.
If the markets are a forward-looking indicator, what is this telling us about the future? Is this simply investors believing that bad things are down the road, or is this a case of investors saying our predictions about lofty growth were in fact incorrect, and we're going to go up to higher ground until we can get a better idea of what's going on?
I think that a little bit of a combination of both, and, you know, there's the old expression, buy the rumor, sell the news. Well, we have a little bit of a day next Wednesday with some of these tariffs coming in. Maybe it'll be sell the rumor, buy the news as people look for how bad things can be. We're seeing the automakers having another really tough day again today. So there's a lot of trepidation heading into next week. Combined with what you just said, in, you know, if you think about all the money spent in AI over the last year and a half or 2 years, in terms of how it was going to change everything, and I'm not ripping AI by any stretch of the imagination. I just don't think it's happened fast enough for people's satisfaction, and some of the predictions coming into the year about how it was going to change everyone's lives so quickly are just kind of you know, being met, shall we say, with a little bit of disappointment. And you and I both lived through some of the, you know, stock market bubbles, and think about when the internet first came out and people were like, oh my God, it's going to change everything instantly. It never happens instantly. It certainly does happen, but it doesn't happen as fast as Wall Street would like it to.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, billions upon billions of dollars in CapEx on building up AI capability. I think we all know it's going to be the future in some form or fashion, but we're about 3 or 4 years into the AI revolution, and these many billions of dollars invested on AI has, you know, given us apps that allow kids to cheat in their homework and envision FDR as a Muppet. And that probably wasn't what they were thinking of when they spent all that money in the first place.
Yeah. I always like to say nothing has helped seventh graders cheat on tests more. But no, but that said, to your point, you know, we know, well, I won't say we know, but I think that there is a great expectation about what it can do, particularly maybe for the medical industry. But again, when Wall Street, you know, when these CEOs going after earnings, the question you're getting is, you spent all this money, what are we seeing for it? And the answer so far haven't been satisfactory. The chip makers have done phenomenally, but companies themselves haven't been able to see the revenue growth off this that people want. And so you think about the Magnificent Seven, et cetera, they've all done so well. But when things start to turn a little bit, everyone's like, okay, what should I do now? You know, you got days like today where you see Tesla down almost 4%, seeing this, a bit of the Magnificent Seven stuff, combine that with what the automaker news, you know, you have Apple down 5.5% almost. So there is some, there are people who are definitely out there today saying, you know what, I've had a good run. It may be time to reconsider with some of these stocks.
J.J. Kinahan, CEO of IG North America, president of Tasty Trade in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Hey, it's Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour, and today we check back in with the woman behind That Jerk Spot, who left gang life to become a purpose-driven entrepreneur. She's got a new food truck, and her business is expanding. We welcome in Lakeisha Hunter, founder and CEO of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner of That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck in Chicago. Also, the author of the book Rise Above the Ordinary, The Life Behind Her Smile. Lakeisha, thank you for joining us today. And I'm just exhausted just reading what you've done up until now. You know, making that transition in your life, starting a business, choosing to mentor at-risk youth. I mean, are there enough hours in the day for what you're trying to do?
Absolutely not. There's not enough time. There is not. And thank you, Rob, so much for having me again and for the exposure, because people have definitely reached out for hearing our interview at Noonday Lunch Business Hour. So thank you all so very much.
Now, this and I really enjoy our conversations together, because I feel like we can trace the evolution of your business over the course of time. And the big development for you is that you have a new food truck. And when you decide to invest in the business, you get the business off the ground, and then you make the decision, well, we're going to add another piece to it. And then you have to figure out if the math works. So talk us through that process that led you to acquiring the new food truck.
Yeah, last time I was on the show, I was letting you know that we were campaigning, doing a fundraiser for a new food truck to be able to house more young people, to get them to work and get them the hands-on skills that they need. So Ecolab surprised me, actually, with willing to help and purchase a food truck. It was 1 year ago in May, and now we are done. We have the food truck, and we're ready to go. And it makes sense. The money makes sense. We have great people working on the project, and our youth are ready.
And then when it comes to a food truck, I mean, we hear about lots of restaurants that start out as a food truck or branch into a food truck out of a brick and mortar location. But when you make the decision, we're going to have a food truck, do you get them used? Do you buy an existing vehicle and then retrofit it to put all the kitchen equipment inside? I mean, what is it like to get a food truck?
It's both and, Rob. So in this particular situation, we purchased one that was already converted into a food truck. And we also have a regular truck that's a 27-footer that we're looking to convert into a food truck as well. So I've had the experience of both sides. So let's say the truck that does not have equipment already that needs to be converted, that takes between $60,000 and $80,000 to complete with a full industrial commercial kitchen, everything on it, but it's much bigger. Now, this truck that we have that's already installed, that one, the best thing about that is we are good to go. Once you get the wrap, you're good to go. Everything is there. So I did come from a brick and mortar and came into the mobile food truck, which the overhead is completely different and doable.
Now, the most important thing about this truck, though, Lakeisha, it sounds like this food truck could ultimately be the difference maker for people who work on it.
Absolutely, because now we're able to go into the different neighborhoods and environments where normally someone from the west side can't come to the south side and vice versa. So now I can go into the neighborhood where these kids are from, where these young people are from, where they can work the dynamics and their household can change and their community can change, where you see other young people watching them make a difference right there in their own neighborhood.
So is this truck on the road? Can we see it out and about?
Absolutely. Come May, you will see us somewhere everywhere. I'll make sure I stop down there where you guys are.
That sounds great. Lakeisha Hunter, founder and CEO of Rise Above the Ordinary Youth Mentorship and owner at That Jerk Spot Catering Business and Food Truck in Chicago. Also, the author of the book, Rise Above the Ordinary, The Life Behind Her Smile. And of course, as she said, come May, look out for the That Jerk Spot food truck on the streets of Chicago.
It's 60 Minutes of Financial Planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Chicago area gas prices are heading higher as we head into spring. Let's see where things may be heading with Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst with the Price Group in Chicago. Phil, thank you for joining us today. And before we talk about the state of gas prices in the Chicago area, have we switched over to the summer blend of gasoline yet?
Not quite, but we're in the process, right? So it's not going to be officially in this part of the country until about June, end of May. So right around, just after Easter, Labor Day. But the process is what causes prices to go up, because what the refiners have to do, they have to get rid of the old and start bringing in the new. And so they have to draw down those inventories and replace them with the new blend. So the benefit, of course, of the summer blends are, you know, they burn cleaner and make your engine run better. The other flip side of that, they could do it a lot easier, but, you know, the politics get involved and it becomes very complicated and very expensive, and that's what we're paying for.
Average price of gas in the Chicago area, or I should say the Midwest, $3.02 per gallon as of Monday. That was up from $2.89 a gallon just a week ago. Now, the international oil market, you know, seems to be cooperating. Oil trading for just a little bit under $70 a barrel, which is not unheard of. And on top of just the switch over to the summer blend of gasoline, getting that ball rolling, Phil, it sounds like those return to office policies may be having an impact at the gas pump.
It sure is. You know, we're starting to see the demand go up. You know, apparently, you know, when people were working out of their house, they didn't have to drive from their bedroom to their, you know, their corner office, right? You know, so that actually had an impact on gasoline demand. But more and more companies, the government as well, is telling people you got to get back to the office. And so that's going to put people back on the road, and that's going to increase demand and production. And while that's not good for everybody, it is good for a lot of businesses, because when people travel into work, you know, they go out to eat, you know, they stop at gas stations and buy stuff. So it might actually give the economy a bit of a boost. And even though it drives up gasoline prices, we get some benefit from the economy doing a little better.
And, you know, several years ago, when at the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war, when we were talking about the price of oil being well over $100 a barrel, and maybe we could be looking at $5, $6, $7 gas, which it did hit those benchmarks in some locations. But we were fortunate in that there were a lot of people still working from home, and that really took some pressure off of the gas station and off of gas prices.
It really did, right? And, you know, when we had the demand down at a time when prices went up, and it could have been a lot worse. So we were very lucky from that viewpoint. Right now, you know, the oil prices are kind of getting a benefit, too, I think, you know, from a change in administration. And what we're seeing, of course, is new streamlined regulations when it comes to production and refining. And so the market's already pricing in the big benefit of less regulation, because a lot of the cost for gasoline, believe it or not, is government regulations. And if you ease those up just a little bit, it makes it easier for refiners to bring that gallon to your tank, and it makes it a lot cheaper.
Phil Flynn, Senior Market Analyst with the Price Group in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.